Hello, everyone, and welcome into another edition of The Front Office, brought to you by Royal Farms, home of the world's greatest chicken and the area's best tasting coffee. I'm Tony Lombardi. Today, I'm joined, as always, by Brian McFarland from Russell Street Report. Brian, some semi-good news I got today, totally unrelated to sports.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of the show? It was on some AT&T network that is now defunct, but it's showing on Netflix, and it's got a resurgence, just like that show Suits did as well.
Right. Yeah.
It's called Loudermilk. Have you seen it?
I've heard of it. I have not seen it though.
It's kind of quirky, but it's kind of an acquired taste. But it's been on Netflix, I think, earlier this year maybe, and it only has three seasons, and each season only has 10 episodes. So I'm on season three, and I think I'm halfway through season three. So you know, whenever you get to the end of a series that you like, you sort of, oh, I'm going to miss this. Just heard today that Netflix might pick it up directly and
Oh,
add a fourth season. So
nice.
we'll
Very
see how
good.
that goes. But for our
Very
listeners,
good.
if you haven't checked out Loudermilk,
I'll definitely do that. Yeah. My son has just started watching Suits, so I've kind of been, around when he's watching it, and definitely picked up some things. I'm like, okay, this would be worth watching, but I haven't actually sat down and gotten to that point yet.
the characters will draw you in quickly with Suits. It's kind of got it's a little swanky. It's got a little, swagger to it. And
Yeah.
it's fun to watch. I think it went nine seasons, maybe.
Yeah, it was on USA, whether it was at USA or FX, but I remember seeing it on, never watched it, but it is kind of funny that, I mean, it must have been popular enough the last nine seasons, but certainly seems like it's way more popular now thanks to Netflix.
Yeah, I've even seen those guys on award shows talking about, what took you so long, everybody.
Right.
But it's a show that we devoured. I mean, nine seasons. I can't believe we watched it all. But and like most of those shows that go nine seasons, it gets a little long in the tooth sometimes.
Sure.
I thought it recovered in their final season to really wrap it up nicely. So definitely recommend you guys stick with it.
Sounds good.
Anyway, that's not why we got together today to talk. Let's talk about the Ravens and the cap situation. So if you could walk us through the details of Nelson Aguilar's new contract with the Ravens, its effect on the cap, and where the Ravens sit today with their cap situation.
Sure. So finally, what, 16 days, 7 minutes. So he signed on Sunday the 18th. So I think we're about, what, 16 days since he signed, 18 days since he signed, probably. And finally, the NFLPA got around to posting the numbers. They're really slow this time of year for some reason, which is just wonderful given that, all that's going to start happening next week. So hopefully they pick it up. But so his deal came in at what they said. So it is I don't know about incentives. I haven't seen that yet, but from everything that's showing, it's a straight 1 year, $3.75 million deal. They did add void years. And I think I said on our last show that this was going to be, to me, kind of foretelling of what if they plan to use them again. And certainly with now Madubuike had been re-signed and what they didn't need to use the tag, maybe they would have backed off. But it seems to be an indication that maybe they're going to go all in again this year and look to maybe take a step back next year or the year after. But then again, if the cap goes up $30 million each year, like it did just this year, maybe they're not really worried about the little extra dead money from void years in the future. So his deal, again, 1 year, 3.75, but because of the void years, he only counts 2.135 million against the cap for this year. So that's what the void years do. They push out some of that money into the future and allow you to keep a lower cap number and get a guy back you would like. And with 1 year deals, obviously, if 2 years, 3 or 4 year deals, you can spread that out. But on 1 year deals, A traditional 1 year deal is the full amount counts in that in the present year, but void years allow you to spread some of that out. So they basically deferred about, you know, about $2.5 million in the future years. So now that can come back to bite them because he had void years on the prior deal and this deal. So if he's not on the team next year, there is going to be almost $3.3 million in dead money. So that's the drawback to void years. So we'll obviously keep an eye on how that plays on out from here. So with that piece that, again, we've been waiting for a long time, and obviously the news that Madubuike was getting the franchise tag, that puts them, they don't have to be under the cap at this point, obviously, but that puts them at almost $10 million over the cap. That's what I'm projecting, assuming there's going to be an exclusive rights free agent tender to Ardarius Washington. And that's probably the last real piece we need to know. So that's kind of their starting point. Again, they don't have to be under the cap until, till 4 o'clock next Wednesday. So between now and then, we'll see cuts and restructures and things like that. Some of the restructures we might not hear about till after the beginning of the new year. So maybe, you know, this time next week. So, you know, may look like they're over the cap at that point. They won't be. It'll already be done, but it just won't have hit the media yet or the NFLPA site, especially if they're being as slow as they are right now. So that's the starting position. They have one easy move to get under the cap. Lamar, I feel very strongly they'll restructure Lamar's contract. That's $11.1 million right there. So then they're out from being over the cap. So they will be under just with that move alone. That obviously doesn't give them much space to do anything else. So there will be other moves, but that one, it makes it very easy for them to get back under the cap with that move just by itself. And of course, there's Tyus Bowser, where 5.5 seems like the next easiest move to anticipate.
Now, the March 13th date, that's 4 p.m. That's next Wednesday. They have to be in cap compliance, and that has to be reported to the NFL. And I guess the NFLPA gets that information. But as you say, they're a little slow to post this information at this time of year.
Yeah, so hopefully they pick it up. But yes, I mean, they will be under the cap. We just may not know exactly how they got there and how far under the cap they are, unless things are reported or until things are reported. And, you know, if they process a restructure at, you know, let's just say noon next Wednesday. So, you know, just a couple hours before, we might not know about that till Thursday or Friday. A lot of the reporters seem to have access to the NFL Management Council's database, and that seems to get updated much more quickly. So Field Yates, I'm pretty sure, is one that has access to that. So that usually, the numbers usually hit there before they hit the NFLPA. So some of those, for instance, if Lamar restructures, we'll probably hear about that from him first. And then we'll obviously plug that in and, you know, kind of figure out where we are from there.
Now, regarding the restructure, just for the benefit of our listeners, Brian, it's not like Lamar is taking a pay cut. They're just restructuring salary and converting it into a bonus when they then just drag it out for the balance of the contract, correct?
Yes, exactly. So they would, you know, they would, that $11 million, his base salary, and he's got a workout bonus. So basically he's got about $15 million. So that $15 million in cash, so to speak, is reduced down to the league minimum, which for him would be a little over $1 million. The balance is paid to him again, same amount, same $15 million, but the balance of that $15 million less the minimum base salary is turned into a bonus. He gets paid the bonus, and that bonus gets prorated over the 5 years. So 1/5 of that still counts against this cap, but the 4/5, which is the $11.1 million, will be removed from this cap. And each year, 11.1 million, and that's a round number, but so 11.1. Oops. 11.1 divided by 4. So, oops, something's wrong there. Let me try this again. So that's about 2.775 per year would be added to the next 4 years of cap. So 25 through 28. So it's not changing his cap number greatly. Now, if they do it again next year, obviously, that becomes a bigger deal. But this is what happens with quarterback contracts. Now they get restructured because they're so big and the numbers are big. They get restructured, pretty much every year, and then by the third or fourth year, then they become so high that they work out an extension to lower it again, and then they do it for 3 or 4 years, and they, hopefully do it again because the quarterback's been so good. If you think about it, I mean, well, it potentially comes back and bites the team at some point. You look at the Saints with Drew Brees, the Packers with Rodgers, and then the Steelers with Roethlisberger. That's what they were doing. And then at some point, you have to take that 1 year, just take the big hit and deal with it. And then hopefully by the next year you're out from under that pile of dead money. But I mean, this is like I said, this is what happens with quarterbacks. So we'll be probably talking about this exact same thing next year when they restructure, when we're talking about restructuring them again.
Now, again, for the benefit of our listeners, because their interest is piqued when they start to see some player movement. And that player shifting, I'll call it, begins with the legal tampering period. Talk about that date and then talk about when it all starts to the fan, you know what hits the fan.
Right. So, technically, when we know this isn't the case, but technically, agents are not supposed to talk to front office personnel about a player until Monday. Now, we obviously know that's already been going on. In some cases, it is, teams give their players, agent, or the ability to go talk to other teams if they're looking for trades and things like that. And we've heard a couple of those already. But that's so but technically then as of Monday, that is allowed. They cannot reach an agreement. Again, technically. But clearly, as we've seen over the last few years, I saw somebody say today that the first wave of free agency technically begins on Monday. And the second wave of free agency begins actually when the new league year begins on Wednesday at 4 o'clock, because all the big names are generally already spoken for. So as of noon on Monday, they can start talking numbers. They can't technically sign on the dotted line, but we will see all kinds of reports of this player has essentially agreed to terms. So that's Monday, and they can't sign the contract until Wednesday at 4. And then from there, I mean, that's basically the timeline. But like I said, the first wave of free agency really begins Monday at noon.
So if Monday rolls around and we hear from the Ian Rappaports and the Adam Schefters of the world, you mentioned Field Yates, that Derrick Henry is going to be a Raven, not only do we know that Lamar has probably been restructured already, but there's other things going on in order to make room to bring on a guy like a Derrick Henry.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So again, they will, there'll be moves to be made. I mentioned Bowser, between, there could be some other cuts. There could be some pay cuts. Last episode, we talked about Ronnie Stanley a lot. But Lamar's is that would be over 5 years because his contract, has a void year in it already. But you can look at guys like Marcus Williams, as well, Marcus Williams, Mark Andrews, and Roquan Smith, without adding any void years to their deals. If they just restructure those three, that's another 15 to 16 million that could be created. And then you've got, the tackle situation. Are they going to keep both? Is there going to be, I don't know if you know how closely you looked at the restructured deal in Buffalo with Khalil Mack, not Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack's in San Diego.
He's in LA.
He's in LA. Not San Diego, right? LA. Oh shoot. Vaughn Miller.
Yeah, the guy I used to be with them.
Vaughn Miller. Yeah. So they basically, now he played only like 22% of the snaps last year. But he basically took a pay cut in half, and then they built in incentives in so he could earn that money back. So that, I'm not saying the Ravens will be able to cut Stanley down in half if that's where they go, but that's kind of what you'd be looking at with Stanley, reducing his cap number, and then putting incentives in to allow him to earn that money back if he's healthy, if he plays enough snaps, games, things like that. So, I mean, that's something, I'm just throwing a number out, but if they could, his cash is $15 million next year. If they could shave five off of that, that's probably, if they five or more, that's probably a good win for the Ravens, in that they can keep Stanley and get his number down enough that they don't have to cut him, because, unless they feel they just need a fresh start. But I think they're better. I think they're still a better team with Stanley, and fingers crossed he gets in better shape and he's healthy, and he gets in better shape just because he is healthy and can get in better shape because of that. So I think that's another option they have there. Cutting Morgan Moses, if they go there, that's $5.5 million. And there's some lesser guys they could cut to create some more. So, I mean, they have options. I think they've got one decent swing in them. I don't think they're going to be signing a guy for more than $10 million a year. So that probably takes guys like Josh Jacobs and Barkley out of the equation as far as running backs go. I mean, let's face it, their big splash right now is Madubuike. Now, if they can get him re-signed before now and next Wednesday and reduce that 22.1 down to, 10 to 11 in his, or 12 in his first year cap number, and save 10 to 12 million, then, that opens up, a lot more space that they might not have to cut somebody. Or they can go out and maybe get another, middle tier $8 to $10 million free agent, whether a guy like Clowney falls into that range, things like that.
Well, in talking about the window of opportunity that starts on Monday with the legal tampering period, you might think that if the Ravens do extend Madubuike on Wednesday, it's because that's where that window of opportunity, that legal tampering period, could actually help the Ravens, because then they'll have an opportunity to hear what other offers are on the table for him. And if those offers look a lot like what Eric DaCosta has been talking to him about, then maybe they do a deal.
Maybe, but I don't think, I mean, in the history of the franchise tag, only one player has been signed to an offer sheet and left for the two first round picks. And that was Sean Gilbert from the Redskins to Carolina back in sometime in the 90s, I guess it was. The franchise tag just shuts down. No, I don't think anybody's coming to talk to him unless the Ravens, and I don't think this is the case. But for guys, for guys like Kansas City, where it sounds like Snead is available, then teams are going to go talk to his agent, because they got to figure out how much he wants and if they can afford it. And then they talk to Kansas City about, what the trade compensation is. But for a guy like Madubuike, who I assume the Ravens haven't used the tag to trade him, they've used the tag to retain him, I don't think there's going to be any kind of negotiations going on there, because nobody's giving up two first round draft picks for him. I mean, he's on the non-exclusive tag. The exclusive tag, they actually didn't, remember, we talked about it last year. The exclusive tag is usually only used on quarterbacks and guys like Khalil Mack, or Aaron Donald, or those types that are the top guys at their position. So I don't anticipate that being. I think what the tampering window actually hurts them potentially. I don't think Chris Jones's numbers will affect him because he is one of those top guys. But I'm fearful that Christian Wilkins, who did not get the tag in Miami, if you know, I've been saying that Matt Ibike is probably in the 20 to 22 to 23 or 25 million a year range. Now, if somebody goes out and gives Wilkins 27, that just totally shifts the market for him. And obviously, I don't know what the Ravens have offered and what he's been asking for. But if something like that happens, so I think that tampering window, if they don't get him signed before Monday, I think that window probably ends up hurting the Ravens because every year, especially with a $30 million spike in the cap, every year we see, numbers that go higher than anybody expected.
Well, I was thinking along the lines that if the numbers work out for Wilkins, let's say somebody offers him numbers that are in line or lower than what Matt Ibike was offered by the Ravens, then maybe that helps get them to the table a little sooner because they'll have those numbers in hand, or at least the dialogue's going back and forth legally with the agents and the front offices of the respective 32 teams.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, obviously, it one way or another, it's going to show one side. Either the Ravens, you got to add, or Matt Ibike's camp. Look, you got to be more realistic. I mean, remember Lamar signed what a week after Jalen Hurts got his deal, and it, you know, and Lamar's deal just went a little over Hurts. So, that seemed to set the market, and obviously, in that case, the Hurts deal sort of put an end to the idea of fully guaranteed money, for once and for all. So yes, I mean, it could be helpful or hurtful. I guess it just depends. Wilkins on the franchise tag probably would have been more helpful, just because, like I said, I'm kind of afraid that his numbers are, well, a guy out on the market generally gets more than a guy on the tag. And unless the guy on the tag is sitting there waiting for the guy on the market to get his money. But if they're both sitting on the tag, it kind of mutes values a little bit. So we'll see.
But before we get to all that, and the NFL gets to all that, each team is going to focus on their own free agents and evaluate where they sit with the team from a cap perspective, what they think they could command in the open market, and really what these players will do on a going forward basis for each of the teams. Do they expect them to, are they on, is their career trajectory on an upward curve, or is it plateaued, or is it on the downwards, spiral? So with that in mind, you, Dev Pantoi, and myself have gone through the Ravens list of free agents, and I want to kind of do an audio version of what we'll publish tomorrow on Russell Street Report, where we do a deep dive into all of these players. But I just kind of want to do a cursory review of the free agents, share the analysis that Dev has put out there, and then you and I can kind of chime in as to whether we think the guy's going to stay or not. And we'll start with Odell Beckham Jr. And this is per Dev, and you'll see it on Russell Street Report tomorrow. He writes, "A lot was made of OBJ's one-year deal being worth $15 million and how absurdly overpaid he was. Although it's hard to argue against the dollar figure sentiment, OBJ's impact was legitimate, even if the numbers don't exactly support that claim. He was a sounding board for the younger wide receivers. His professionalism and clutch playmaking ability was also on display. He made some key catches in important moments and drew several PIs to set up the offense. All in all, OBJ may not have been what he was when he last played with the Rams, but he wasn't too far off the mark, and he still has something left as a possession receiver." So, talk about the cap implications, Brian, with respect to OBJ, and then I'll chime in with what I think is the ultimate outcome.
Sure. So he and the Ravens reworked his contract in early January. It didn't really do anything to benefit Beckham, but it definitely helped out the Ravens. Because he had void years that if he had not been re-signed by the 19th of February, as we saw with several other players, Kevin Zeitler being the most notable, his contract would have voided. And in that case, there would have been $11 million in dead money on the cap attributed to him. What they did is they got rid of the void year. They actually added, technically, I guess, added 2 years to the deal this coming year at a minimum base salary, and then a $50 million salary in 2025. Now, that's just a dummy salary. Obviously, that was never going to be paid. But that salary becomes fully guaranteed if he's on the roster the second day of the league year. So that allows the league year to occur. And then they can cut him after 4 o'clock on the 13th, before 4 o'clock on the 14th. And if they're in that window, assuming they cut him, and let's hope there's no fax machine glitches or anything like that, then they would not, that salary would not become fully guaranteed, but that allows them to use a post June 1 release on him. And this all assumes he's not re-signed before then, but that allows them to use that post June 1 release, which means only 2.767 million in dead money will count on this year's cap, and it pushes a little over 8 million on the next year's cap, which isn't great, but it is what it is at this point with the amount of void years that were involved there. So so it gets Beckham technically. I mean, he's not going to be a first wave of free agency guy anyway. So it's not like he needs to be taught, his agent needs to be talking to people on Monday because he's still under, technically under contract. But he's kind of a second or third wave of free agents, which will again start after the, you know, after the beginning of the league year. He did that. He did the Ravens a solid. He could have been a free agent immediately. It only delays him by a day, basically. But you know, it was a nice maneuver, and it technically gave, you know, if they work something out between, you know, now and next week, it did give them essentially another month to get things figured out. Now it might have been a thing where if they were able to get Madubuike signed to a long-term deal, that gives them a little more cap room and they could make something work with OBJ. But if that doesn't happen, they're gonna have to say to him, well, you know, we'll, you know, we'll, we're gonna cut you, but we'll talk in the future depending upon, you know, what offers you get and where we are. And again, at any time that Madubuike gets done, then maybe they revisit it.
Yeah, my take on OBJ, given all that, is that his time in Baltimore is done. Even if he, I know you said that he's likely to get a deal somewhere in the $5 to $8 million per year range. I even think at that, it's time to move on from OBJ. I think what he did in Baltimore in one season was admirable. I really have grown to respect him immensely as a man, as a professional. I like what he did for the team in the locker room, in the, on the sideline, as Dev indicated, that he brought something. He was a leader. He was a mentor to some of these young receivers, and that's all great. And also, you know, we don't even know the answer to this, but we've also often speculated that signing him helped to get Lamar back to the bargaining table again, and maybe even inspired him to sign more quickly than he otherwise might have. So all those things are good. But I think it's time to move on from him. It's time to let Rashad Bateman be the guy they thought he was when they spent a first round draft pick on him, because I think in some way he got in the way of Rashad Bateman. And I think it's time to cut bait on Odell. Wish him well. And hopefully he's that possession receiver that Dev describes for another team. Hopefully not in the AFC North.
Exactly.
Jadeveon Clowney, one of the home runs for Eric DaCosta. And I won't go into all of Dev's comments on him. I think everybody has an understanding of who he is. He was a guy who played many more snaps than I expected him to. Oftentimes in the past, you'd see Jadeveon Clowney on the injury report, didn't play a full season. He was nothing like that for the Ravens. You know, we heard how happy he was playing in Baltimore. As his agent said, it was the first time he finished the season as a happy player. So hopefully all those things point towards the Ravens bringing him back. Your thoughts on his projected value given that great season in 2023 and what it might cost to bring a Clowney back?
Yeah, he's going to be an interesting one. He obviously signed a shockingly small deal here last year. I mean, even when he signed, when we saw the numbers, I thought it'd be more like, it was basically 2.5 million. I thought it'd be twice that much, 5 million, and a lot of that has to do with his name, and obviously his time in Cleveland didn't end very well. His time in Tennessee before that didn't end very well. This time he's on the upswing. He had essentially a career year, perhaps one of the best years of his career. So he's not going to come anywhere near that cheaply. Projections are all over the place, but I'm guessing it's, on average, and whether it's a 1 year deal, whether he's, at that point of his career where it's just going to be 1 year deals, or whether, there might be a 2 year deal involved. I think it's going to be 7 to 10 million a year. If it's a 1 year deal, maybe it's more on the higher end of that. If it's a couple year deal, then maybe, it's a little lower. As you said, his agent spoke glowingly of being here. He did. The Ravens certainly seem to like him. I love him even. I guess one question is, can you strike lightning in a bottle twice? Because obviously this past year was out of nowhere. I mean, we expected him to be solid, but he was way more than solid. So, I think that's going to be the decision they have to make. Certainly seems like a guy they would like back, especially considering they're two young pass rushers. Obviously, OA's been up and down. And then obviously we've seen pretty much nothing out of Ajabo, who we all had high hopes for once he recovered. So, but this year became a wash as well. So I recovered from his combine injury. So we'll see. I think he's one of those guys, again, I'll probably say this 10 times throughout as we go through the players, but if they sign Matt, if they can get Matt Ibike done, it makes it a lot easier to get some of these guys back that, it may be difficult for them to get back because some other team may come up with numbers that just make it harder for the Ravens to match, especially if it's a 1 year deal. If somebody offers Clowney 1 year, $12 million, it's going to be, even with void years, I think that's going to be hard for the Ravens and their cap to match.
You mentioned Matt Ibike again, and I think of Clowney and Matt Ibike as a 1-2 punch. And what I mean by that, years ago, I had a conversation with Eric DaCosta, and one of the things he said to me, I can't remember the two players that were involved. I believe it was a lineman and a linebacker, but he talked about them being complementary players. In other words, their skill sets were complementary within their scheme. So they thought that this player combined with player A with player B, the whole was greater than the sum of the parts. In other words, those guys separately aren't as good as they were together. And if the Ravens are going to be investing a lot, or they are investing a lot of money in Matt Ibike, let's face it, the way Clowney was such a force on the perimeter and the way he sometimes commanded double teams, that oftentimes left Matt Ibike with favorable one-on-one matchups that probably enabled him to have the kind of year he had. So I kind of look at it that way, that 1-2 punch together, that might be something that they want to stick with. And it's something, because I know we're going to get to Kyle Van Noy in a little bit, but I don't see them bringing both Van Noy and Clowney back. But I think they need to get one of those guys back. And I think Clowney is the better of the two for the reasons you said before. They've gotten nowhere near what they expected out of OA. I know that Eric DaCosta at the combine said how much he loves the player and how he hustles this, that, and the other. But I don't know. He's just not that edge force that Clowney is, even at the age of 31. So I got to think they're trying really hard to bring Clowney back.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think, he's obviously the better player than Van Noy, and Van Noy will be 35 or 36. Is that right?
Maybe 35, yeah.
35. So, same thing. You got a career year out of him. I mean, he shows up in September and was fantastic. But, again, something so far out of what he had been a couple of years prior. And I mean, it goes for both of them. Can you expect that again? And when you're, especially for older players, now older pass rushers can kind of hang in there. But yeah, I mean, if you're probably picking one, money aside, if you're picking one, you want that to be Clowney just because he's, 4 years younger, and more of a disruptive force. I mean, Van Noy's obviously very solid. And it's interesting. I mean, he's always been a good player, but he always seems to bounce around. And so is Clowney. But Clowney's had his ups and downs different ways, too, with injuries. But Van Noy's been healthy most of his career. Miami signed him to a big contract. They cut him a year later, even though he had seemingly had a solid year. So I don't know. I don't know what it is about him. But obviously, there has been some buyer beware about him in the past when he signed contracts, decent free agent contracts.
I want to go through the entire list, if possible, with time permitting. But in doing that, some of those guys, I just want to say yes or no if he stays or goes. And Sure. And I think Dalvin Cook is probably worth a little bit of a discussion. And the reason being because they have a needed running back. And the running back marketplace hasn't been favorable for the players. But I also think that Dalvin Cook showed in that little bit of, flash that he had with the Ravens, maybe there's a little something left in the tank. He's going to have to play on a prove it year if he wants to make more money down the line. And sometimes those things work in the Ravens' favor. And for those reasons, I say go for it with Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine he's going to get much. I mean, he was pretty bad with the Jets. Now, you can obviously blame that on the Jets. But he's not even 30 yet. He'll turn 29 in August. Obviously the last year he didn't get a lot of carries even with the Jets. He's going to be a minimum guy, minimum salary with incentives probably. But he's also going to look for where his best opportunity is. He might be a guy that doesn't sign till June after the draft shakes out, as teams kind of reassess what they, what they've gotten or May and June, I guess I should say, or even into training camp when, players are, get hurt, and then somebody's got to go find a guy. You got to go find a guy. Like, unfortunately, the Ravens had to do the last couple of years. So, but I mean, I think it, his return here probably hinges on, are the Ravens going to go out and, sign one of the, upper level free agent? I mean, the market is flush with running backs, and obviously Derrick Henry's been the one who's been tied to the Ravens the most. But, if they go sign Henry, I think that probably means Cook won't come. He'll look for a place where he can work, he can battle a rookie, draft pick for, for starting time. Here, unless Henry gets hurt, he's not going to see much playing time, except maybe as a third down back. But, the Ravens want to spend a little extra there when they already have, Justice Hill, who can handle that role. And then, hopefully Keaton Mitchell will be healthy enough by the time the season starts to be included. So I think there's a chance. I agree. He seems like a guy that might be a fit. Now, if they don't go get a Derrick Henry, they're going to rely on, bringing in a draft pick, and then Cook could be that veteran guy, and you let it play out during training camp. And if it works out, it works out.
Another guy that was really a home run for Eric DaCosta, Ronald Darby. Didn't have a real fast start. I remember seeing him at training camp and looked a little sluggish at times, but as the season picked up, so did his play. And towards the end, I would say he played towards the end of the season like a Pro Bowl corner. He was really good on the perimeter. And what really impressed me, Brian, is how he attacked those bubble screens from the edge and came up and made tackles. That I thought was really impressive. So that was another home run for DaCosta. But, they got him for a one-year, $1.7 million deal with incentives that I believe he earned. And this year, who knows? I don't know what his market's going to be, but what do you think is a fair market for Ronald Darby?
Yeah, I kind of look at Darby and Arthur Millette together. And he's obviously down the list a little since we're going alphabetically, but it's probably unlikely that both of them return, but I certainly think they would like to get at least one of them back. Neither of them are going to break the bank. I don't think either of them are getting, 5-year deals or anything like that. And I guess Darby, is he in his 30s yet, or he's got to be close to it. So that's something that at 1.7, I think he's going to get a bump from that, but I don't know that it's I don't think he gets 5 a year, even or 5.4 a year. And that's something where if need be, they could certainly he only played 38% of the snaps, and I think a lot of that has to do, as you said, early in the year. He was kind of down the totem pole. Rock Ya-Sin was a little higher, and then Ya-Sin obviously wasn't playing well, and they kind of flip-flopped it. So, if they could get him back in the, a bump from the 1.7, and he did earn some incentives, so in cash, let's see, what was his total cash? So in cash, it was about 2.2 million he earned between salary and incentives. So, 3.5 to 4, maybe with some more incentives in it, might be a good deal for him. I think that's something they'll certainly explore. Again, along with Millett, and Millett was even cheaper last year, because he was basically a veteran minimum deal. So, and Millett played pretty well. There were a couple games he definitely did not, but overall, I think he played really well as well. I don't know that they'll bring them both back, but they do have they you know the cupboard's pretty bare on guys under contract. You've got Stevens obviously and Marlon Humphrey, who I don't think is going anywhere despite some of the talk. And then you've got your two draft picks from 2 seasons ago who basically been hurt most of the time, and that's Armour Davis and Pepe Williams. So I you can't count on them. I mean, maybe they be you hope one of them becomes the next Brandon Stevens and really shows out, but at this point, you can't expect that. So I do expect they'll draft a corner pretty high, in the first 3 rounds. Obviously, you never know. The draft sometimes just doesn't work out the way you hope, and you can't get the guy or get a guy in those rounds when you kind of hope to. So I think at least Darby, one of Darby or Millett, I think will be back. It's just a question of which one, and it depends on where the market takes those guys.
Yeah, my bet is that of the two, it'll be Darby because I think he has, that he's got that edge perimeter presence, plays there well. I don't think that Millett is that kind of guy. If you've got Stevens and Darby on the edge, you can move Marlon Humphrey into the slot where I think he plays better, or at least makes more plays that way. And I think that you can fill in depth behind them through the draft and some lesser free agents, but I agree. You're not going to bring back Darby and Millett together. I think Darby's a choice. By the way, he turned 30 in January, Brian, and
Okay.
he's also a Maryland native, so you got that working in the Ravens' favor too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, moving on to an interesting player, J.K. Dobbins. But before I get to that, I wanted to mention that we're sponsored by Royal Farms. Royal Farms through April 30th. Every day is Friday. And what Friday means, Brian, is Friday, Friday. So every day is Friday. They have $3 large Western fries, $5 family Western fries, and for the personal one, it's only $2. And those Western fries are nearly as good as their chicken. So Western fries at Friday, every day at Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. Okay, J.K. Dobbins. When people ask me about J.K. Dobbins, because we can make this pretty quick, I think. When they asked John Harbaugh about the running back situation, his response about the running back situation, he said, J.K. is floating around out there. And I found that to be hardly a ringing endorsement. I think the guy needs a change of scenery. He's only played, Brian, 24 of a possible 67 regular season games, less than 36%. I think, as much as I love the player, the potential of the player, at some point in time, you just have to cut bait. I think that's this year.
Yeah, I think so too, and I agree that was kind of telling. That comment he said more about talking. They were talking to Gus. Talking to Gus Edwards, so he made it seem like there was still some interest there. But obviously, he didn't say the same about Dobbins. I go back to that sit-in, I guess we'll call it, that he did during training camp, that I don't know what his agent was thinking, because he had no leverage whatsoever. There was no way the Ravens, coming off of an injury, there was no way the Ravens were going to be giving him a long-term deal that he wanted. I mean, they probably would have been happy to give him a little bridge deal, but that didn't seem like that was what he was looking for. And obviously, that was last offseason when the talk was about how poor running backs and how they're being treated poorly by the market. So I just have a feeling that that didn't sit well with the Ravens. I mean, I follow a lot of NFL, former NFL GMs and front office people on Twitter, and most of them were just shaking their head like, I don't understand what they're trying to accomplish here. So I think from both sides, it's probably time for him to move on. And I mean, I think he's incredibly talented. He obviously he's got low mileage, as you said, basically low mileage, as you said, because he hasn't played in a lot of games. I mean, if he can stay healthy, he could be an absolute bonanza for a team on a very minimum deal with, again, some incentives. I just don't think that's happening here.
I don't either. Another guy that I think needs a change of scenery is Devin Duvernay. For a while, he was Eric DaCosta's only Pro Bowl selection, but that's obviously changed now. But I look at Duvernay, he carried a cap figure of $4.525 million in 2023. I thought they should have cut ties with him then. Nothing against the guy. Seems like a great guy, works hard, but I don't think he's a good route runner. He's stiff in the hips. He's not very fluid, good straight line guy, but let's face it, the NFL has legislated out that position for the most part of kick returner. So I don't even know why they carried the $4.525 million figure in the salary, but they did, and I just think it's time for him to move on to another team as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a lot. He was a luxury last year, as you said. Kick returners are, a dying breed, and I mean, obviously you got punt returning too. But obviously, we saw Tylan Wallace be able to handle that role last year and have that huge kick return against the Rams to win the game. So, both of those things together, I don't think Duvernay is going to get a big deal out there, but. I don't see him coming back. I mean, his snaps went down substantially. I mean, from his offensive snaps went from almost 62% down to 12. Now, obviously, there may not be as many guys in front of him this year, depending upon that are going to take some of those snaps away. But he never seen he was an afterthought in Monken's offense, so I think that's probably telling as well.
Gus Edwards, stay or go?
I think it's going to depend on that free agent market. It's flush with guys, which might drive prices down for the the lower level guys, which is no, I shouldn't say. I mean, he's not low level, but your average guy, so to speak. So I think there's a chance he's back, but it depends on are they going to make a big swing at running back? And obviously, if they do that, then he's definitely not back.
Malik Harris, an interesting player. I think he really started to shine under Mike McDonald in his second season as with McDonald as a coordinator. Role player, did his job well, and I think that's where he stays as a role player. But the NFL doesn't pay role players or special teams guys all that much money. Where do you think he ends up?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got a chance to come back. Depends on if there is any kind of market out there. I mean, we've seen guys at times we didn't expect to get, he's not going to get a huge deal, but we see deals that come along that, wow, we didn't expect those numbers. He's a guy that if some team, you mentioned, I mean, he flourished under McDonald, and maybe McDonald's a guy, maybe Seattle. As a team to look at for him, if they offer him, Anthony Weaver too, and so obviously a lot of the defensive coaches are elsewhere now. If they see something in him and they can talk their team into, signing him, then and obviously he provides solid special teams value, which is certainly something the Ravens, will pay for. So I think there's a decent chance he comes back, but I certainly don't think it's guaranteed.
Two quarterbacks are free agents, Tyler Huntley and Josh Johnson. Do either of them come back?
I think Johnson's probably got a better chance at just in that veteran role. Right now, I mean, technically, I guess, because of who's under contract, Malik Cunningham is under contract. So he's the backup. Will they draft another? That seems like two really young backups if they drafted a guy. I think Huntley's probably gone just to try and find another opportunity. Lamar's gotten his long-term deal. If Huntley wants to truly start somewhere, then he's probably got to go somewhere that he, there's a chance to compete, at least for behind up either, to compete for a starting spot, which I'm not sure he'd get an opportunity, but, or to compete for a backup spot behind a so-so starting quarterback, a lesser starting quarterback that he might get the opportunity if the guy doesn't play well. So I think he's more likely to go. Johnson's a guy they're not going to have to break the bank on, a minimum deal. They certainly don't seem to like paying their backups. They did carry three quarterbacks this year for the first time in a while, actually four by the end of the year. If they plan to do that again, I think he's got a good chance to come back. Interesting thing will be, I think it'd be kind of funny, but Johnson played at San Diego State under Jim Harbaugh. And it'd be interesting. It'd be funny to see the two teams try to, he's not going to break the bank in any way, but if the two teams compete for his services, brother against brother.
That would be interesting, but I think JJ will be back. He's one of those guys, and I wrote on the piece that'll be published tomorrow that he's like an old reliable piece of luggage. Maybe you don't use as much because it's not the shiny, colorful new style, yet you hang on to it just the same, just in case. And I say JJ will be back sometime in late July around training camp. So we talked about Matabike, so we've already discussed that. We've discussed Arthur Millette. And it brings us to Sam Mustipher, a guy who, in a pinch, did a decent job for the Ravens. Your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he's a guy that will probably be back. I mean, he's not getting more than a veteran minimum offer. The only reason for him to look elsewhere, I'm assuming that is assuming the Ravens do want him back, but the only reason for him to look elsewhere is if he can back up, again, kind of like I was just saying, about Huntley, if he can back up a guy who's, a so-so center, not an all-pro center or, Pro Bowl center, but a so-so center where he might be able to, if that guy falters, he can start. So that would be, to me, the only reason he's going to go anywhere. I mean, the money's going to be the same pretty much either place. So, but I think there's a good chance he comes back. As you said, he, in a pinch, I don't want him starting 17 games. But to start to, a game here or there, I think that's fine. And you got to have guys, that balance out your roster like that. You can't have a top flight backup at every position behind an all pro. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. Next guy on the list is Tyler Ott. Tyler had a great season, mostly because you never even heard his name. Also,
yep.
So that tells you that the long snapper does his job. However, they have another long snapper under contract. His name is Nick Moore, and that'll put Tyler Ott back on the marketplace.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he, as you said, you don't hear his name, so that's a good thing. I assume that means he put good tape out there for other teams. If obviously gets no offers, he might get a training camp offer to come back here just to as insurance. But yeah, I mean, they redid Nick Moore's contract last year when he got hurt, added another year on, so he's under contract for 2 years. So that pretty much foretold that they plan for him to be back this year and beyond.
Delshawn Phillips is a guy who filled in at times at linebacker. He also was a contributor on teams. He had a 1-year, $1.11 million deal. You expect much different from him?
No, I think he's a guy, you know, again, they value special teams. He's not going to get an opportunity to start anywhere, or maybe even compete for a starting job anywhere. But he is a guy that can give you some snaps here and there in a pinch. So I think there's pretty high probability he's back on again on a 1 year minimum deal.
Patrick Queen, I think we all know where this one's going. I can't say enough good things about what Patrick Queen did in 2023, given the way that his fifth year option wasn't picked up. He could have pouted. He's a young guy. He's only 25 years old right now, but he didn't pout, gave everything he got to the team, played hurt, still fought through the injuries and played at a highly competent level. He's going to get paid. He might go out there with Mike McDonald too. Who knows? We'll find out. But I think he's going to get a big payday, and the best the Ravens can expect from this is a third round compensatory pick in 2025.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, they drafted Trenton Simpson last year, you know, in anticipation of this, you know, and that, whether you want to call it, you know, as you said, I mean, you know, he didn't pout. He did what they hoped he would do. He did, and that helped him out as well. So, yeah, I mean, he's looking at probably a, you know, 16 to 20 million a year deal on the market. That should be sufficient to get them a third round comp pick. I'm sure they aren't going to sign somebody that's going to mess with that, and they've got a lot of free agents, obviously, as we go through this list. So they're, you know, they're probably, unless they go crazy, and again, I don't expect them to go crazy bringing guys in. So they're probably looking at three or four comp picks next year. Four is the max. They might have five or six that they could get for comp picks for, but four is the max. So, but yeah, Queen, you know, he did, as you said, he did everything expected of him and beyond. And I'm sure, you know, I'm sure he'd rather be here. I know they'd rather have him here, but he's going to make a bundle.
You mentioned Trenton Simpson. Now we're going to talk about John Simpson. Okay, he had an okay year. I thought he was better as a run blocker than he was a pass blocker. Not a very athletic guy, but I think he did a decent enough job with his limited tools. But you know, when you play for a team, Brian, that went 13-4, had the sixth best overall offense and the first rushing offense, those guys tend to get a raise.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, think about just last year. Now I think, oh my gosh, the guard that went to Denver I just totally
Oh,
blanked.
Ben
Ben
Powell.
Powers. Ben Powers. Yeah. So, I mean, we never expected him to get the kind of deal he got, and he's going to get the Ravens a fourth round comp pick this year. So I don't think Simpson's getting that kind of deal, but I agree with you. I think he did enough. I did see a guy I really respect, and a guy who hits home runs with his projections. Brad Spielberger for Pro Football Focus, who actually started with Over the Cap back when Over the Cap hit was starting up. He has Simpson getting a multi-year deal at I think $5 million a year. And the Ravens will be happy to see that happen. I mean, that's not gonna be a huge comp pick anymore, but I mean, that'll give them a solid six then, or that's one that they can sign an outside free agent and have a guy to cancel, use that to cancel. So yeah, I think he's probably gone. I mean, obviously, if the market doesn't develop for him at all and they can get him back on a minimum deal, they might think about it, especially, you know, if Zeitler definitely doesn't come back. But obviously, have three young guards in line with Ben Cleveland and Saleh and Voorhees, who obviously was basically redshirted this year. So they're going to still need another guard in there somewhere, whether that's the draft or they bring in another vet. But they, you know, I mean, they, you know, considering they picked Simpson up off of, they signed him late in the year for the practice squad, or they add him to the 53 late in the last season before. And then, I mean, all through, and everybody's talking about Cleveland and everybody else, Harbaugh kept saying, don't forget about Simpson. And that's the guy that came through the best. So hope, you know, if it's not him, hopefully it's another guy, another veteran they bring in like that.
Next guy on the list is Geno Stone. I think not to the level of Patrick Queen, but I think given the Ravens' guys that they have on deck. And given the fact that he's played his way off the team because he's not going to be that cheap $1.76 million guy again, I think Geno Stone has played his way off the Ravens roster. He'll be with another team next year.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, I mean, he another guy who did well for himself. I mean, you know, he was a seventh round pick here. He got released or and then added to the practice squad, and then Houston picked him up and had him for the end of his rookie year, and then inexplicably did not tender him as an exclusive rights free agent, which still boggles my mind because it's the cheapest guy you can have. Your offseason roster totals 90 players. You're not depending on him anyway. You're not losing any money if you cut him in the future. So he must have looked horrible there. That's all I can think. And then he got, you know, the Ravens bring him back, and you know, he played special teams his second year, and then the last 2 years has seen, you know, increasing amounts of time and done really well for himself. The one interesting thing is there, obviously, just in the last, what, 4 days, five quality veteran safeties between Justin Simmons, which is obviously he's more the quality. He's top notch. Kevin Byrd, Quadre Diggs, Jamal Adams, which granted, he's really fallen off. Jordan Poyer, all those guys were released. So the safety market is incredibly flush. And that might drive down the prices for some guys, but obviously for Stone, it's a matter of he wants to find a place where he is playing 100% of the snaps. Here in the rotation, you know, he was not playing 100% of the snaps. I'm sure the Ravens would love to have him back. You know, he played 82% of the snaps, so he certainly played plenty. And but you know, somehow that because of all these other safeties, the market falls apart. I guess there's a little chance they could bring him back if they, you know, if it's only a, you know, $4 million a year, they'd probably consider it. But with the specter of Mike McDonald out there, I think if I especially since they just released their two top safeties, I think he and Queen were probably together. And going to end up in Seattle, and that's going to be a, you know, a 100% starting job, not some three safety rotation kind of thing that he was in here. So yeah, I as much as I'd like to see him come back, I think that, you know, what it the opportunity will be more about what he's looking for than the money itself.
Next on the list is Brent Urban. I'll read Dev's analysis of Urban. He said Urban remained an important rotational piece on the defensive line, especially in the red area and short yardage scenarios. His ability to overpower at the point and destroy plays was vital in those high leverage moments. Even though he is getting up there in age, you would be hard pressed to find a defensive end with the length and sheer size to impact plays with limited snaps. Last year, he was on a 1 year, $1.165 million deal. Chances are he's probably in line for something similar. Is he back with the Baltimore Ravens in 2024?
Yeah, unless somebody comes, I mean, he's 33, so I don't see anybody coming out of the woodwork and giving him much more than a minimum deal. He seems to love it here. He made comments that he wished he had never left. I think he signed in Chicago and they gave him a decent deal. And then he, obviously he's been back the last couple, and then he went somewhere else. But he never had the success he's had here. So the last 2 years he's been here. Yeah, I think he's one of those glue guys, you know, that comes at a minimum cost. And, you know, if he gets beat out by a rookie draft pick, he's not costing anything against the cap if things don't work out in September. I think he signed pretty early in the league year. He might even sign before free agency last year. So I think he's a guy that, you know, and his wife loves it here. If you've seen some of her posts on Twitter.
I do.
So I think that's a shoe-in. You know, as long as some other team doesn't kind of go crazy and come in and offer him more than you would expect. But at 33, I really don't think that's gonna happen.
Yeah, he turns 33 on May 5th of this year, and he was a fourth round pick out of Virginia. And I don't think that Ravens Wired would be quite the same without him and Michael Pierce together.
Yes, that's another reason to maybe give him an extra 100,000 in bonus just for that.
Or at least give him some of the ads, a little a side gig going on with where you get some of the YouTube ads that they generate over there. Kyle Van Noy, we talked about him briefly already, and we understand his value. We understand he's going to be 35 years old, and he had a 1 year, $1.4 million deal. He's bounced around a lot in the league. I think the Ravens got to focus their attention on Clowney. I say Van Noy, thank you for the time. It was great having you here. It was an excellent signing, but his time is coming on.
Yeah, I think it's kind of he's kind of in the Justin Houston was here for 2 years and they let him go, let him walk last year. Van Noy's probably a guy that's going to be around till May and June. So if things don't work out in free agency and things don't work out in in the draft, that may be something they revisit because by then. I think I put an article. He could get a deal for 3 to 5 million for 1 year. Probably more like 3 to 4. I'm not sure you get five, but maybe with incentives to get to five. But I think that's something that he's going to be out there just like he was this past year, maybe into June, July, August even. And if they feel if they have injuries or something like that, I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll have him on speed dial.
Next up on the list is a familiar face, a guy who's been around for a number of years, but he's a guy who really doesn't make much of an impact, but he's a good guy to have on your team, does work on special teams and fills in admirably as a reserve in the defensive backfield. I'm talking about Darryl Worley. Don't expect much more than what he got last year, the 1 year, $1.165 million deal, unless you think otherwise, Brian. But I think given that, given the Ravens' thin position in the defensive backfield, I think in his their familiarity with Worley, I think he's back.
Yeah, and they moved him. I just noticed I put him in the article as a cornerback, but he actually played much more safety in training camp last year and in OTAs. I think he's a lot like Urban, just a guy that will help you on special teams, provide you with some depth. Again, at safety, right now they only have two safeties under contract for next year. So I think he's a guy that'll be back. Nobody's going to blow his doors off. He only actually because of injury only played in 8 games this year. So I guess that helps the Ravens out a little. But again, familiarity, as you said, and they really spoke glowingly of him at times. So I think he's a guy. I don't think he's on the front burner, but he's a guy in that third wave of free agency, or maybe he, comes to the Ravens and says, look, obviously I'm not getting any offers out here. Let's get this done. So yeah, I think he's back.
The one guy who was a swing and a miss for Eric DaCosta in 2023 is next up on the list. His name is Roth Yacine. Brian, from the jump, I didn't like the signing. I didn't think he was a guy who had long cover skills. And as soon as I went out there in training camp and watched him, he proved me right, unfortunately. I was hoping he would prove me wrong. Seemed like any time a player got beyond 20 yards, they were throwing the ball to whoever he was covering. And it didn't matter if it was OBJ, Zay Flowers, or the lowest guy on the totem pole in the receiving. That guy was getting open and making catches. And I think it played out that way. I think that they knew they made a mistake, went out and got Darby, and it wasn't long before Darby usurped his playing time. I think he's a mistake that they won't make again.
Yeah, I think the only way, and that's it's all he's going to get, but he got what was it, $4 million deal. He's getting nowhere near that. He's probably a guy that's only going to get veteran minimum offers. Maybe if they're short on corners, he's not a guy they're going to say we want to sign this guy to be under 53. But if he gets no offers elsewhere. And you bring him in just in case, and so he can be your sixth corner if people get hurt that you plan, expect to be on the 53. I guess it's possible, but sometimes when players have that kind of year, even if even the familiarity, because it's probably bad mojo for him, here, so he'll probably look to go elsewhere anyway, even if the offers were equal.
Because we went in alphabetical order, it's not hard to figure out who the last guy on the list is. It would be Kevin Zeitler. Brian, they didn't come to terms with him when that 4.2 and change million was on the table with the voidable option cap hit. And I know you might have a different opinion on this, but it seemed like when they couldn't get come to terms with that amount of dead money on the table, that it's unlikely that Zeitler is back. I thought they should have extended him in 2022. They didn't. I thought they should have reached a new deal at the beginning of 2023. They didn't. I thought they should have extended him again later in 2023. They did not. And here we are, and he's a free agent. I think he's played his last down as a Raven.
Yeah, probably. Obviously, the fact that, as you said, they didn't get a deal done last year when they added the void years, as opposed to just adding some actual real years and spread that money out over real years. Now, that could have been because he wasn't sure if he was going to continue to play, and he didn't want to, he didn't want to lead the Ravens down that, that path of, oh, you're giving me a big bonus because we're signing a 3-year deal, which means a bigger bonus. And then I'm going to retire and I'm going to owe you money back. And it's just a hassle. So maybe that was the reasoning, but clearly, or if it wasn't the reasoning and they just couldn't come to the right numbers, obviously that lasted for almost a year that they couldn't, come to the right numbers. So that speaks to a gap in their valuations. So I don't think the chances of returning are high, but I'm not closing that door. Just on the chance, perhaps, that the Ravens were right in their valuation and he was wrong. And he goes out in the free agent market and doesn't get the offers he was expecting. And he goes back to the Ravens and said, hey, is that deal you offered me still on the table? Obviously, it cost them about 3 million extra because of that 4 million, one million of it would have counted this year anyway if he'd been extended. So it's really not, I mean, if you want to look at it that way, it's really a $3 million difference, not a $4 million difference. But the numbers are going to have to be a little more in the Ravens' favor this time. I think that is foretelling. I'm not closing the door totally, but I do think that probably is the case.
Brian, as always, thank you for your time. Thank you for the effort in compiling this collaborative piece that you and I and Dev Panchwa put together, which we will drop tomorrow morning on Russell Street Report. So that's it for the front office today, folks. Brian and I will be back again at it. We might do Thursday instead of Wednesday, only
Well, yeah, I
because.
was thinking about that because, well, we'll know a lot. Maybe we can play that by ear since we'll see what happens in on Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, let's do that. So either Wednesday or Thursday, we'll be back. So thanks to all who have listened, and special thanks to Royal Farms, without whom this podcast is not possible. Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. Until next time, everyone, have a great weekend, great week ahead. And don't forget, spring forward on Sunday. Thanks for listening.